This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Grant and Danny on the Fan, welcome back, and thanks for making this show part of your Monday. I saw this story today, passed it along to Danny and the guys, and I said, this is really, really interesting. We got to talk to someone about this. So remember that SMU got into trouble many, many years ago when you weren't allowed to get players to come to your school with any kind of under-the-table deals, and so they got what was called the death penalty at the time. Well, the Southern Methodist University Mustangs are going to be unveiling a new NIL agreement that's going to pay its football and basketball players the equivalent of an entry-level salary. This news originally broke. It was reported on one earlier this week, and someone who covers SMU and LSU for that publication joins us right now, which I think is going to be good just to get some intel on exactly what is going on. How big of a deal is this going to end up being in college sports? Billy Embody is with us on the BetQL guest hotline. Bet smarter to beat the books. Download the BetQL app today. Visit BetQL.com. Billy, thanks for the time. How are you?
I'm doing well, guys. How are you?
Doing very well. So good, can you just get people up to speed, I guess, to start? How is this working? Where is the money coming from? Is the school allowed to be involved, or is this all kind of outside of their periphery? How does this work?
Yeah, so NIL is all outside of these schools, and it goes state by state as far as, like, if the school officials can even discuss some of these things, but it is outside of the school. So you're not seeing, like, the actual programs pay players. But what is happening at SMU in this case is two boosters are forming this NIL collective, and collectives are a fancy way of, you know, calling some sort of organization that wants to pay players. You know, sometimes you can have businesses do it, and that's just a simple sponsorship, but these are groups of boosters that want to pay players. You know, in this case, they're going to do a bunch of community service work, a couple of community service events a month with the players, and then they'll be able to kind of also, you know, use and market the players, you know, to show that they do work with these, you know, charities and things like that. But in this one, there are a pair of boosters that are going to pay each football and men's basketball player $36,000 a year, about $3,000 a month, you know, just for being, you know, quite frankly, a, you know, football or basketball player. And this is all legal. You know, with the way the NCAA has, you know, allowed athletes to make money off their name, image, and likeness now. So SMU has this collective that just started. They also have a collective by kind of like more of a grassroots situation that has developed over the last year and a half, where a bunch of boosters contribute to a fund that helps keep players on the roster. So a lot of the time, what we're seeing in college football are schools are using back channels to, you know, take the temperature of other schools' top players. And then those top players go to the school and say, hey, so-and-so is reaching out to me. What can you guys do for me? And this is where it just kind of all gets murky. And that's where the collectives have to step in and say, no, we don't want our top player to, you know, leave our program. And this other one that is called Pony Sports DTX has done about $1 million in deals already in the past year or so, and SMU now has a couple of $100,000 a year players before even this new collective came in with the $36,000 a year.
So, Billy, that leads me to my question. So, it's kind of twofold here. One, that the sort of, you know, minimum wage, quote unquote, that they're basically going to pay the entry level salary just because you made a roster, you're on the team. That's an interesting tact. The other side of that is the highest bidder phenomenon that I think is going to be rampant in college football. In fact, it sounds like it already is to some degree. How does this sort of approach relate to that?
Yeah, so this is, you know, like you said, kind of a base salary. I think it's a good way to show players that if you just come to SMU, they're going to take care of you. And not to mention, SMU is a school that does full cost of living, which the NCAA allows. So it's not just a normal stipend that players get to live off campus or, feed themselves on their own. It's more of a it's a really sizable chunk of money a month that the NCAA allows colleges to give players that kind of stem from Shabazz Napier, you know, complaining that, you know, he was eating like ramen every day of his life in college back when he played for UConn. But so they do that. This, you know, collective with the $36,000 a year does kind of set the baseline, which is a pretty impressive number. You know, Texas mm-hmm. Tech is going to do $25,000 a year for each player on their football and basketball team. And so this is kind of one-upping that. And, you know, collectives like SMU does have that other one, Pony Sports GTX, that, you know, pays the high salaries to keep players on the roster from being poached, you know, for those highest bidder situations. So SMU is pretty well positioned in all of this overall. But across college football, you are seeing some of this, you know, highest bidder type stuff, you know, come together. Where players are, you know, I would say almost given no choice to transfer to a school or sign with a school. And in recruiting, that's happened here or there for the most part for years and years. It's just been more under the table. Now it's almost allowed to be more so in your face.
So the $36,000 for every player on the team, are there going to be guys that make more than that? I mean, obviously you can go out and get whatever you want, but like that's the base salary. Or is this same collective, if they're able to get some 4 or 5-star wide receiver, going to do what the other schools are doing and still offer that guy $600,000 or whatever if they can? Or is it just everyone's going to make the same money aside from whatever you can go get on your own?
Yeah, so this collective, and it wouldn't shock me if down the line it grew just as the market for NIL and college football changes. But for right now, this collective is only $36,000 a year per player. And then that's why, you know, the other group of SMU boosters, for example, is all together to kind of pay those players that need, and deserve more money. So kind of you almost have like two salary cap situations. This is like an endowed scholarship almost.
Okay. And then
so
Danny, let me follow up
on
that.
And then the other one takes.
That makes sense. Billy Mbati is with us, by the way, one sports writer, covers LSU and SMU, joining us here on Grant and Danny. This is pretty fascinating. So, all right, my other than curiosity as I was reading all this today was it looked like this is football and men's basketball. Correct me if I'm wrong. And it's every player on the team in those two sports, $36,000. I wonder, is it just those two sports? And will they get any kind of blowback for that? Because I can sit here and say those sports make them the most money. But there are now rules that govern what you can and can't do with one sport versus another, men's sports versus women's sports. You know, next someone's going to have a problem they're not doing this with fencing. Like, how what happens in that regard? Or is it because it's a private thing, they can do whatever they want?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I mean, there's definitely blowback. Texas Tech got some blowback, when they did football and men's basketball. I think they might have done the women's basketball team too. But, you know, people that take care of the programs that make the serious amount of money are going to get blowback. But at the end of the day, it's not affiliated with the university. So, you know, like any business, you know, I mean, if they wanted to, they could have hid this thing like, some local business, they could have run it through a local business and said, hey, they're going to sponsor so-and-so's, car wash is going to sponsor the football team. And it probably would have gotten less blowback, but because it's two boosters saying we only want to spend money on the football and men's basketball team, that's where it kind of gets, you know, a little bit of blowback. But I mean, honestly, it's not the same, but people donate to the sports or to the scholarship programs or the, you know, majors or whatever they want to with their, you know, colleges. You know, for example, I'm not going to donate to, it's just me. I don't have type of money to throw around. I'm not going to donate to the business school when I didn't go to the business school. I would donate to the journalism school that I went to. So, you know, that type of situation is almost similar in a way, because people are just going to support what they want to, you know, and are able to. And, you know, if people are passionate about women's tennis or men's soccer or rowing or any of the other, you know, quote unquote, non-revenue sports, you know, those players are actively looking, I'm sure, for NIL. And some of them do, you know, they're all able to. So, you know, you could come in and be a major gift donor. You could have done, you know, like men's tennis or women's tennis at SMU or swimming and diving at SMU. And you could say, you know what, instead of donating $10,000 a year to the actual program and supporting their operations, I might donate $8,000 and donate, you know, $2,000 to the players themselves or the, you know, athletes themselves, and let them have a little bit more spending money in their pocket. And if everyone kind of adjusts and does little things like that, you know, athletic departments are going to have to adjust too, and make sure they keep money coming in for the actual operations. But, you know, the athletes, you know, could at least see a little bit in some of these other sports. And I think they will to an extent.
Billy, this is a warning in advance. This is not a great question. This is just an old man thing that I'm about to do. But I was a kid when the whole Pony Express scandal happened. I sort of barely, you know, on the periphery, just kind of remember the group that was really good. They didn't get to play football for a little while after that. And the death penalty was so severe. And now here we are talking about this kind of within my own lifetime. I understand times changed. Nobody there now had anything to do with that then. But it's just an incredible march forward. And it's amazing that we're here. Again, I told you it wouldn't be a very good question, but just something very profound that struck me, that, of course, this is happening at SMU.
Well, and it is kind of, I guess, poetic in that regard. But, you know, the thing with me is it just goes to show kind of how, you know, misguided that decision was years ago to you know, cancel football. And then ultimately it canceled the second season for them, you know, throughout it all. So. And then you look back at some of the punishments for, you know, a Penn State, a Baylor, some really serious institutional issues there that weren't just about paying players and kind of the slap on the wrist in comparison that they had gotten. You know, it's just wild. It's pretty crazy to see where this is all going in that regard. And you know, I was talking to an SMU commit this morning, a guy who's committed to the class 2023. He was our first commit, Jackson Lavender, out of Lovejoy High School up here in Texas. And I said, what do you think of that NIL deal? He said, it just goes to show that SMU is always ahead of the game, that, you know, they started this whole thing years and years ago, and people are finally seeing the light.
Yeah. Still ahead of the game.
That's great.
The story was great, and the reporting's been really, really interesting, and a job well done. Thank you for shedding some light on this and helping us get some answers. We appreciate it, Billy.
Anytime, guys. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, our pleasure. Thank you. What a story, though. I mean, I've been wondering, Danny, where this is going and what's next. And I do think we talked to Kedrick Golston, remember? And he was really smart on this. And he talked about, you know, having some type of stipend maybe or paying some type of, for lack of a better word, salary by semester. This is kind of that direction from SMU. Now, if you're going to try to out-recruit stars from other schools, $36,000 is not going to do that. Obviously, this is not the program spending the money directly. Mm-hmm. Everyone says the schools aren't involved at all. I just don't.
Right, but the coach in the living room is going to be able to say $36,000 from Billy the Booster. Yeah.
And so I do think this helps you with depth. I think it helps you with a lot of the players on your team, obviously. It's the beginning of all this. But I would imagine it won't take long before a lot of teams are trying to find boosters to do this exact same thing.
Oh, without a doubt. Again, this is the new frontier. I mean, you know, the way it was underground, hush money, you know, sort of, you look at the movie Blue Chips, for example, where Ricky Rowe got a new tractor at his family's farm. That's how it used to be, right? You had to wash the money and go through all these different kinds of channels. Now it's out in the open, and it's only got to go through one thing. So you're going to have liaisons between coaching staffs and athletic departments and you know, the boosters who just cannot wait to spend money on these players, and it's only got to go through one little intermediate step. And we're not giving you money for football. We're giving you money for your TikTok video. We're giving you money for the T-shirt that you're wearing or the belt or the socks or, you know, the end zone dance that you do. This is the new frontier. And, you know, I understand wanting these athletes to be able to profit because of the obscene amounts of money these universities are making while charging outrageous tuition fees and keeping endowments and building, you know, gargantuan buildings and naming all sorts of officers that don't do anything at these schools. I understand people's objection to the dichotomy of athletes, quote unquote, not getting anything and the schools do. But there's no governance on this. And I don't know how this helps level the playing field. I don't know how this helps necessarily with schools that aren't competing at a higher level to compete at the highest level. You're never going to win an arms race with these schools that are dealing with the multi-millions of dollars in terms of, you know, the elite group. I think ultimately what happens is you're going to have this like massive paid semi-professional division sort of break off Pangea style, and then regular intercollegiate athletics will be dealing with, hey, you got a nice $200 stipend this month. You know, in addition to your scholarship and some meal money paid for, don't spend it all in one place. You know, buy one pair of jeans as you're competing on kind of this lower level. It really is crazy how fast this is all moving.
Well, it's also funny that while I would say this is the biggest issue facing college sports right now is figuring all this out and starting to regulate player movement, it's one of a bunch of issues that they got to deal with because the sport at this point looks like it'll be unrecognizable in a few years, if for no other reason than conferences and rivalries and who's playing who. And I mean, you're going to have, I was talking to Cody Decker, who's a former big leaguer who's on BetQL with me on the weekend sometimes this weekend about, he went to school at UCLA and just like the conference schedule midweek of going to Michigan or whatever it is to go play.
So weird.
You think about that. Like these guys are traveling regularly to the middle of the country for three or four games each week now for these series. I don't know how it's going to work, but I am really interested in watching it all play out at the college level. Rick is in D.C., wants to chime in on Sam Howell before we move along. Rick, thanks for the call. Grant and Danny, what's up?
Hey, Rick.
Grant, Danny, first-time caller.
Oh, look at
you. How you guys doing?
Very kind of you. We appreciate that.
Hip, hip, hooray! Hip, hip, hooray! Hip, hip, hooray!
Boom.
Boom. So I wanted to give Sam Howell a little love. Was he perfect? No, but he brought some excitement, and I like what he did. It felt a little different. It felt a little Danny took a lot of my thunder, but it felt a little different. And if he puts the effort in the work during these preseason games and shows that he could do a little bit better, I think he's definitely going to take Taylor Heinicke's at least number two position. Starter? No, I don't think so, but definitely – he brought some excitement. He brought a lot of things that I think can be really positive for this team going forward. And if you guys don't mind, can I give a little bit of love for the DC and Marvel talk and give DC a little bit of love?
Well, someone has to do it, so you might as
Somebody
well.
Needs to. Someone needs to. I'll allow it.
Okay, well, let me give DC a little bit of love. While Marvel is at the epitome of the top in big screen cinema,
superior.
These guys do not sleep on DC's animations. They have a preferable, and Grant, I'm shocked, you being, you know, a Batman fan, DC has a preferable list of outstanding animation movies that are, have even adult juniors in it, you know, like themes and topics. And they're really good. So I would suggest people
Wait,
look
so
into
So other than Batman, you give me, like, give me a couple things DC that I need to have watched.
Okay, and animation-wise, they have animation movies. They have The Flashpoints. They have The Atlantis with Aquaman. They have Wonder Woman, Blood and Glory. It's one of those themes. They have Teen Titan animation movies that are just, like, unbelievable script and story. And I'm so frustrated that these, you know, writers aren't getting more from these animations that come out.
How about we got a DC mark?
They need somebody.
Did you know that there were DC marks out there?
Tens of them. Now, here's what I'm going to say. I first of all, respect
Batman
the call.
Movies, absolutely bangarang every time. But settle down when you start. All that other stuff, I don't even know what some of the stuff he was just naming was.
So, listen, the best animated stuff that he's talking about from DC, these Batman movies where Mark Hamill voices the Joker, and they're good for what they are. They're good animated movies with some, you know, not necessarily something you'd sit down and watch with your 4 or 5 year old, but they're 20 years old. These are decades ago. What we had basically was DC could basically walk out and be like, Christopher Nolan, Batman trilogy, thanks. And everyone would be like, yeah, that's pretty much perfect. Nothing we can do about that. And we should not even try. And then basically Marvel's like, watch our tier 27 property make $1 billion at the box office in basically the decade plus since. There's nothing DC's got going right now. They just fired everybody, and they're like, we're going to start over. We've got a new universe planned. You'll see over the next 10 years. We're going to have a couple things that are good. And they're a million miles behind the eight ball. A couple of those animated movies back in the day are good. Return of the Joker is from like 2000. But like, with all due respect, sir, Marvel time. It's Marvel time.
It's Jared Patterson time, too. We'll hear from him next. And Antonio Gibson fumbled on his second carry in the preseason. What does that mean for him and Brian Robinson? Next on Grant and Danny.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.
Grant and Danny, welcoming you back on The Fan. We're going to be talking the running back position in just a moment. Antonio Gibson fumbled. Brian Robinson, really good. Arrow trending up, arrow trending down for those two guys. Jarrett Patterson, though, averaged 5 yards per carry on Saturday. I caught up with him in the locker room after the game.
You finally got to get some carries against somebody else. How'd you feel like today went?
I feel like it went really good. You know what I'm saying? Like I always, like Coach Jordan always tells me. He always tells me, you know, don't count the reps, make the reps count. And that's what I do. You know, just every opportunity I get, you know, I try to give my best. And it's always good, you know, going against someone else other than your teammates. It felt real good, you know, competing against Carolina today.
Running back position here is loaded all of a sudden. I feel like one of the things maybe in life where we don't relate well to what goes on in the NFL locker room is you got all these guys around you. You're all vying for the same touches. But yet it's just part of it. And yeah. You guys are professional. How do you not count spots and carries and all that? Like, how do you just focus on what's in front of you?
I feel like, you know, brought up, you know, I had good coaches, you know, I have a good, you know, I guess support system that just tell me, just put your head down and work, you know what I'm saying? Don't, like I said, just focus on your daily improvement and how you can get better and how you help the team. And I feel like once you do that, good things happen.
You got big time experience last year in the regular season. Even in the final week of the year, you got the 12 carries and caught 4 balls, I think, scored a touchdown. For you coming into this year, in what ways are you a better running back today than you were 365 days ago?
Like you just said, the experience, you know, I know what a real game, the how fast it is. I'm kind of, you know, used to the fast pace. And
was that jarring at first?
I was, you know, just it was a guessing game, but now it's just playing, just football at the end of the day. And then I'm not guessing no more. I'm feeling confident. I know the system. I know the pass pro or the concepts and the running scheme, and I'm just playing faster.
Who was Sam like in the huddle? It's always cool when a rookie gets
his
first
cool.
Reps.
Like I said, I knew Sam in college. You know, I watched him in college, and he was a very exciting player. Like I always say, if you're a dog on Saturdays in college, you're gonna be a dog Sunday in this league. And you know, I feel I'm very excited to see what he does, and I feel like the future's bright for him.
First time wearing the new gear, right? I'm sure you had it hanging in the locker. You looked at it. The lids and the jerseys, what'd you think of the fresh coat of paint?
It was cool, you know, it's something like, you know, like a new era, a beginning, you know, around this city, and I feel like people should get excited for it.
Appreciate you.
Thanks so much.
Jarrett Patterson, who last year, as a rookie running back, ended up getting to work in regular season games now as he's trying to make this roster, a sign that they have improved their personnel at that position. But let's talk about the Gibson fumble and the Brian Robinson performance. Starting with Gibson, though. Danny, we made a lot about his fumble problems last season. And it wasn't just you and I. I mean, I mean the royal we in this town, in the media, as a fan base. And understandably so. He fumbled 6 times last year. And we're talking about, this isn't like back in the day when guys would get 325 carries. No, he was fumbling on average last season as the guy carrying the mail for this team, basically every 42 rushes. That's once every 2 games, just about, if you're carrying the football a bunch. You know, probably more realistically in today's NFL, once every 3 games. But even still, that's unacceptable. And so he goes into the offseason. He knows he has to work on it. He's coming into a make-or-break third season now, coming off of 1,000 yards. He's rushed the last 2 years for 795 and 1037. But that is the best thing you can say for him is the yards he's rushed for because he runs a lot, because they give him a lot of carries. Last year, he was top 5 in the NFL in attempts. And on his second carry of the preseason, this is 2 days after on the show, one of my kind of highlights and one of the things we accentuated as a must for this preseason was Gibson ball security. His second carry, he fumbles. You can't make that up. It couldn't have been a more damaging result as far as I'm concerned for him. You could tell. He was beside himself on the sideline. Charles Leno went over to try to just get in his ear hole and tell him everything was going to be okay. But he knew how big of a deal that was after last year. It's a complete setback for him.
Yeah, and it's, by the way, a great poll on Charles Leno. I thought that was a great moment for him, a guy that's quickly become a leader here. But I know the focus of the convo here is on Gibson. When you start to add it up, the combo of the fumbling, but also the drops, Grant. He dropped 12% of the passes thrown his way last year. That's a terrible, terrible rate. The other guys in that sort of range for drops are hyper-productive, super-explosive, you know, kind of you deal with some of those things. You could deal with a guy putting the ball on the deck if he's, you know, making a bunch of different people miss and is exploding for 6, 7, 8 yards a pop and, you know, is a home run threat. He was prodding last year. He was, you know, just a Christian Okoye-like player, an Ironhead Hayward-like runner last year, just not dynamic at all. When you combine the fumbles, you combine the drops in the passing game, this was a really discouraging debut for him, and I think he needs to show well to hold on to his job. I really do.
Yeah, I wonder what people think, and we can open up the MGM National Harbor listener lines now at 800-636-1067, 800-636-1067, about Gibson going into preseason week 2. And what the leash should be in terms of his predominant role as their lead ball carrier, as their running back one, so to speak. Because he's going to get more carries this preseason. And I'd like to think, because it's only going to be what? Let's figure maybe 10 or 12 carries tops in the dress rehearsal and a half of football. So let's say around 10. And then he carries the ball maybe 3, 4 times tops if he plays in the final preseason game. And I would say there's only a chance that that happens just based on him having been out there after Jonathan Williams yesterday when they wanted him to show them something. So maximum, I would say under 15, but probably around the 12 range the rest of this preseason. So clearly he's unlikely to fumble again. If he does, that's catastrophic. And I think we can all agree if there's another fumble, then he's lost his starting job, right? I mean, if you lose 2 fumbles in the preseason after leading the NFL last year, that's enough. It's over. No?
You would say there's a high percentage of that, yes.
Okay, so then you go into the regular season. There's got to be some happy medium of him not knowing, how do I want to say this, him not thinking about it when he's running. In other words, if he knows his first fumble, whenever it happens, if he loses a fumble, he loses his job. I think that's detrimental. And I think when that's in your head, that's a problem. Same with a quarterback who can't make a mistake or a lineman who has to be perfect on his blocking assignments, whatever that is. So there's got to be some balance between the leash being short, but him not thinking he has to be perfect, because I think that's the worst thing that can happen in a sport where that's just not going to be the case. So what does that look like, I wonder? I mean, if he fumbles in the first game, that I don't know how you, if you're Ron Rivera, I don't know how you keep him as your guy. But if it's not till week 3 or week 4, has he kind of put some deposits in the bank so that he could take out that withdrawal? I'm not really sure.
This is tough to quantify here, right? It's if there's nobody else, right, on this roster, let's just say Brian Robinson didn't exist and it was the current group of we plucked Jarrett Patterson, we plucked Jonathan Williams and Reggie Bonifan and whoever else off of the readily available running back pile, you'd go, yeah, give him some leeway, a guy that's transitioning positions, is still learning the nuances of it. But this is a group that's trying to compete. This isn't a feel what you've got here. This isn't a year one Ron Rivera where it was a bonus you won seven games. Nobody has time for a dude that's putting the ball on the deck, again, especially if you're not dynamic. But if he starts ripping off, you know, magical runs, right? If he's taking screen passes to the house, if he's doing things that are special, he puts a ball on the deck, I don't think the reaction's the same. But when you get this kind of four carries for 2 yards plotting, you know, internet meme of, yeah, there was a cutback hole there and you just kind of jogged towards the sideline and got hit for a gain of zero, it's hard to find kind of the enthusiasm for it. So, you know, you wouldn't have thought a guy with 1,000 yards last year, one of the seven guys in the league to do it, would be in as tenuous a position as he is. But I don't know. Maybe I'm looking for confirmation here and kind of rolling with my own opinion and having this be validation for it. But I get the sense that his hold is tenuous on that starting job.
Well, they drafted a running back in the third round and
tells
broke
you something,
unwritten
right?
Rules to keep McKissick when he left for Buffalo. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's fair. It's a good point.
With all due respect, like, yeah, his job is tenuous. I mean, every action they've taken, what they say is one thing, but the actions matter more. I've always... Yep. Kind of been a believer in showing me what you are thinking, not telling me. And when they show you, they're trying to upgrade. They're out there addressing the running back position. Let's go to Tony in Annandale. Tony, how are you? You're on Grant and Danny.
I'm doing good. Good show.
Thanks, buddy.
Thanks, man.
Antonio Gibson, I mean, you got to give the Washington coaching staff credit. They turned the receiver into a running back, but his upside is not Deebo Samuel. And his downside, the fumbling, I mean, he got 1,037 yards rushing, but with a 16-game season, that's like 65 yards a game. So I hope he resolves the fumbling issues, and I hope he can just develop as a receiver running back. But I just want to say I think one of the best offseason moves was re-signing J.D. McKissick, because third down is just so clutch.
Oh, he's the man.
Agreed.
That 15-yard catch and run middle of the field where he hit the circle button, as I like to say, and just did spin cycle on a defender and then picked up another handful diving forward all the way down to the 10-yard line. That's J.D. McKissick at his best. He is a that-is-easy button on third down. He will make his quarterback look good. He makes
check
defenders
downs
miss.
Into first downs, man.
Exactly. Yeah. It's the short throw that becomes a chain mover. He is very rarely tackled in space by one guy. They have to use the sideline as a friend and kind of use angles against him because he's shifty and he's really elusive. And that's what works in this league, is guys that are just hard to get on the ground and you need to bring help to corral. And he's certainly that type of player, but super, super underrated. There's no doubt about that. Let's get more of your thoughts on Gibson next and transition over to talking Brian Robinson, who couldn't have helped himself more. I mean, forgetting for a second the Gibson fumble, Robinson immediately rips off a 9-yard run, then a 9-yard catch, showed really good hands on the catch, picked up a couple of blitzes, did a lot to help his cause in his quest to get some burn the rest of this preseason higher up the depth chart. We'll get into that next on Grant and Danny here on The Fan.
It is Robinson, and he is in for a Commanders touchdown.
Kenny Albert on the call on NBC this weekend. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on The Fan. Taking your temperature on the backfield on offense, where Antonio Gibson fumbled, put the ball on the carpet on his second carry after 6 fumbles last year. It was a talk of the team last season and all offseason. It's an area where he's got to improve. And right away, ball comes out. Someone was tweeting with me during the game. You could always hit me up at Grant H. Paulson. Danny's at Funny Danny. And they said, yeah, but he was almost down, and the ball got knocked out. Yeah?
And then what?
That's how fumbles work, right? I mean, they were like, the ball got kicked out, which I don't think that was the case, but they're like, he was almost down anyway. Okay.
Okay.
You're not helping. He fumbled. That's what a fumble is. He lost the ball before he was down by contact. And this
he almost
is
held on to it, so it's a half fumble?
Right, exactly.
No, they don't do it that way, dude.
If Brian Robinson came in and had 4 carries for 4 yards, I think that this would be a little bit of a different conversation,
agreed,
demeanor within the fan base. But they drafted a guy in the third round. We all saw playing all season long on national TV. He didn't get drafted out of Memphis like Gibson did, or even USC plays it late at night, or you know, Tulsa or something random. He got drafted out of Alabama, where he just played on CBS and on national TV, ESPN and whatnot, over and over and over again, and he just ran all over great defenses in the SEC. And now, after having a camp where everyone says he looks pretty good, he had a great first preseason game. So this is now officially a thing. Kevin's in Arlington on G&D. What's up, Kevin?
Hey, fellas. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, Grant, when I was watching the game, and of course, beginning with the fumble, and then just from that point forward, I just kept thinking to myself, they're not using Gibson correctly, okay? He's like the Samuels, Debo and Curtis. He's better in Tebow. Them will wide out. I don't know why Scott Turner doesn't come up with more wingback packages like Kyle has out in Frisco, because I don't see Gibson breaking his fumbling habit running between the tackles. Now, granted, I'm biased. I was born in Tuscaloosa. My dad got his graduate degree from Alabama, so I watch a lot of Bama football. And there's just no comparison. Robinson is a pure pound-it back. Gibson's a big play guy, but he isn't natural. He doesn't necessarily see the holes. He fumbles. He's very raw as a running back. So I just – to keep pounding a square peg and a round hole with him, to me, and I don't get it. I think – the other thing, just real quick, is – Curtis is hurt all the time, you know, and hopefully he won't be, but if he's hurt again, you could use Gibson in that position. That's just what I would do.
Thank you, Kevin. Thanks, appreciated. Kevin. Yeah, there is something to be said for that, because you could have your Curtis Samuel role filled by Gibson and have Robinson be your thumper, possibly. I would certainly have him learning as much as he could about some of what Samuel does with some of those bubble screens and whatnot. That really hasn't been how they've used him since he came into the league at all. I mean, he doesn't really have a wide receiver body at this point. They haven't asked him to run those routes at all. I know he did a lot of that at Memphis, but he has not done it in the NFL.
Yeah, he's changed his body type. I mean, he's become that more, you know, thicker workhorse kind of a guy. I know he lost some weight here in the offseason and improved his body fat percentage. You know, he really got healthy and dedicated himself to losing weight in the offseason story that we always hear about. Then the guy, of course, fumbles right away in the preseason. But, I mean, just look at how less dynamic he was last year. His yards per touch as a rookie was 5.1. That's in the really good range for a running back. That's like some of the better players in the league were doing that last year. Like, that's a Kareem Hunt sort of level guy. That's Aaron Jones. That's catching and running the football. Last year, he was down at 4.4 per touch. That includes catching the football. That's down. That's what Mark Ingram was doing as a way over the hill backup kind of running back guy. That's what some of the plotting second and third string backup. That's what Mike Davis did in Atlanta. It's just, I don't know exactly how it happened, but the growth that we thought we were going to see, we really just haven't seen for a guy that was so exciting at one point, taken to the position. He was doing these things as a rookie. We're going, he's been playing running back for 5 months. This is amazing. Well, last year to me, despite the overall numbers, I think that was more about opportunity, as we've said a million times. You're not seeing improvement in a lot of ways, and the fumbles are just killer.
Mike Lanham, Grant and Danny, what's up?
Hey, guys. I got one word for you. Alabama.
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 I watch them a lot, not because I'm a Crimson Tide fan, but because I have a gambling problem. That's beside the point.
Well, they're always on TV, too.
I was excited when I got him the third round. 6'1", 225, 230. He can run around you. He can run through you. I was at the game. I was watching him. Gibson had his chance. One of the many millions of projects we tried, they tried it. He's not LaDainian Tomlinson. He's not Marshall Faulk. Chris Johnson's not walking through that door. Let's face it, he doesn't run through tackles. It's third and one. When he gets the ball, you're confident he's going to fall forward for the 1 yard. You're worried he's going to fumble. Put it down. Put it in Vegas right now. If not by the end of training camp, by game six, he's going to be the starting running back. Let's. For the love of God, for once in our lives, can we please utilize our players for their strengths?
Appreciate you, buddy. I mean, the thing that I think just is unequivocal at this point is Robinson, a natural running back, has had a better, more successful resume and career to this point collegiately than Gibson did, because he didn't even play the position.
Yeah.
And so you wonder, okay, if he had the same NFL carries, what would his resume look like at this point? He's Danny. I'm Grant. You're listening to The Fan. You got a thought on the backfield, you can hit us up, 800-636-1067. Kevin Durant has responded to the rumor that he might retire. We'll tell you what he said. Plus, we'll get you ready for the Nats, who are calling up C.J. Abrams tonight as we continue on The Fan.
Roll Tide!
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.